On the Record with Gavin Riley on News Talk.
Now, nobody needs reminding that it's only 3 days since we were finally presented with a route out of lockdown and back towards some kind of normality. Construction fully resuming again from next Tuesday, inter-county travel and a lot of other things getting back again a week from tomorrow. Now, there are some people who wonder whether all of this might be coming a little bit too soon, others wondering if we are jumping the gun a little bit, others wondering why there appear to be some contradictions in the public health advice. To discuss all of that and more, we're joined by Philip Nolan, who's the president of the Irish Epidemiological Mathematical Advisory Team at NEFID and the president of Maynooth University. Philip, thanks for joining us this lunchtime. Can I start off firstly by asking you, what makes now the right time to begin relaxing restrictions?
I think there's two reasons why we need to relax these restrictions now. I mean, the first is the length of time that we've had to endure, quite frankly, really restrictive public health measures. You know, it's 61 weeks since our first case. It's 18 weeks since we entered level five. So people, when we crave social contact, we need to buy the essentials, clothes, shoes, books, things like that. So we do need to move on at this point. And we're at a point in the pandemic where certain low-risk things that are really important to us, like going to larger shops, going to smaller shops in small numbers, getting together outdoors just simply to be together and enjoy each other's company, where those low-risk things are relatively safe. And particularly as the vaccination program ramps up, and first of all, the vulnerable are protected, and then more widely, society achieves a level of protection where the virus finds it more difficult to spread in society. And a slow, incremental, careful reopening of society is appropriate at this time.
I know you're not responsible for the way in which your own mathematical models are reported on by the press, but there might have been some people who would have seen some newspaper coverage in the last couple of days and then gotten slightly alarmed or maybe felt slightly deflated when they saw, you know, projections of there being potentially up to 1,500 cases again a day. Can you talk us through whatever models you have that suggest that there might be 1,500 cases a day and whether, in fact, you know, they may be cases among people who are ostensibly healthy and who aren't going to bother the health system?
The important thing to realise about all of these models is there's a huge range of uncertainty in them. And the most important uncertainty at the moment is the behaviour of this B117 variant, the more transmissible variant. So we can look back last summer and we can see what happened last summer as we progressively opened up. And the answer is we started with a reproduction number around 1, creeping up to 1.2. And then by September, as almost everything was open and we were starting to move indoors to socialise, reproduction number was as high as 1.6. So we could feed those numbers into our models and we'd have some level of certainty as to what might happen. However, B117 is somewhere between 40 and 90% more transmissible.
And yeah, that, have you said before that it basically adds somewhere between 0.4 and 0.6 to the R number?
Well, it multiplies the R number between 40 and 90%, and that's a huge difference. You know, so if you look at where we were last May, June, where we had a slightly more liberal opening up than we had now and a reproduction number between 1 and 1.2, that could give us a reproduction number now anywhere between 1.2 and 1.9. So we have to talk government through, you know, what would happen with 1.2, what would happen with 1.5, what would happen with 1.9. And the range is completely different. Mm. And when, you know, so the important word in the sentence there is could. If something goes this way, we could actually see through the next 6 or 8 weeks with very low case numbers, a very small increase in case numbers or even a reduction in case numbers. On the other hand, if B117 is at the upper end of that transmissibility, we could unfortunately see increases in case numbers. And that's why we have this very appropriately on government's part, very cautious approach. One thing at a time, the safest things first. And we are, to be clear about it, going to have to learn as we go. And there may be a bump on the road where we find something is less safe than we think it is.
There are, though, other metrics, and people will point it to case numbers, and the case numbers is something that we've all become accustomed to looking at. But if you look at a lot of the other crucial metrics, like the number of people in acute hospitals is down 60% in the last month, the number of people in ICU is down by a third. Increased socialising doesn't appear to have made much of a dent or to give an any new wave as regards the burden in hospitals. So I suppose the important thing also to note is that a rise in case numbers doesn't necessarily mean that you have to act in the same way that you might have previously.
That's very true. There is an increasing dissociation between case numbers, hospitalizations, and in particular, a very welcome a reduction in mortality. The fundamental reason for that is because of the protection of older age groups and increasingly vulnerable people. Unfortunately, for those who are unvaccinated, there still is that very inevitable relationship between if there's a certain number of cases in younger age groups per day, it turns into a certain number of hospitalizations and a certain number of ICU admissions. Unfortunately, very few deaths, but some very severe illness. So, that's the first point. Yes, the reaction to a certain number of cases per day now is different from what it would have been in January or October or April last year. But we do need to be cautious that we can't simply let this disease run through younger people. We really need to do everything we can to limit its transmission.
On that note then, what do you think is behind the increasing preponderance of cases in younger people? I mean, I noticed yesterday that the median age for yesterday's cases was 26, which I think is the lowest that it might ever have been on a single day. So increasingly you do now have a larger percentage of the daily cases being in groups who thankfully don't have the same adverse health outcomes by and large, but nonetheless it still must be slightly discomforting to see that there's so many cases. And I'm wondering if you have a theory for why that is.
Well, one root cause of that is the very simple issue that if you have fewer cases in older people, the proportion of cases in younger people goes up. So we are going to see that inevitably over the coming months, that as we see fewer and fewer cases in people over 80, 70, 60, 50, we'll see an increasing proportion of cases. So what we need to be watching is the absolute number of cases in the younger age cohort, okay, not the distribution anymore, because the distribution is skewed. That said, you do point to something important, which is younger people are more pro-social. They've got higher levels of social contact. As we relax public health restrictions, we always find younger people to be at higher risk of becoming infected than people in their 40s, 50s, 60s and 70s, even without vaccination, because they're simply out and about more. And we do need to watch that, particularly over the next 12 to 16 weeks.
So do you think then, and I'm not saying this without any kind of sense of blame, but do you think that they have basically started observing the reopening of the country before it's been officially sanctioned?
Well, to a certain extent, they always do. They intrinsically have a larger social network. They intrinsically have higher social contacts. So if I were to get a little bit ahead of the program and decide I'm going to see my friends now, I simply have a smaller network of friends that I'm going to see on average compared to a 25-year-old. So there's no sense of blame attached to this. One of the things that we have noticed, if you think back a few weeks, we were seeing increasing case numbers in 19 to 24-year-olds. That was flagged very clearly. Lots of local and national public health messaging about it, and the cases came back down. So one of the interesting things about this pandemic, really going back to last September, is the level of responsibility shown by everybody, including younger adults.
You reached on one important point there a few minutes ago, which is that you have to have a certain sort of distribution. It has to be a calm and controlled and gradual easing of measures. A lot of people would be maybe a little bit surprised that so many relaxations are all going to kick in on the same date, a week from tomorrow. Does Neville have any concerns, or are you in any way uneasy about allowing so many new things at the same time?
No, I'm not. I think the measures are carefully calibrated. We're particularly looking at things that are important to people that are low risk. So you're talking about the opening of shops. We can manage going to the shops very safely. And I think there's a fundamental point here about all of this, much more important than what the modelling shows might happen or might not happen. The future of this is in our own hands. If we take all of the measures we can take to continue to keep our level of contact modest and to be careful. Outdoors is safe, but let's not get too close when we're outdoors. Mm. Please don't drift indoors. If we take that responsibility, then we'll be seeing case numbers either remaining stable or decreasing.
Well, on the drift indoors, I mean, it has been the logic of both yourselves and Neffet and the logic of different ministers for health over time as well, that you can't allow people to meet, for example, or up till now, it's been discouraged to meet in gardens because they know that the, you know, as soon as the weather turns or somebody needs to go to the toilet, that you'll end up migrating indoors and that's where there's more danger. Is it not the same principle now that if you allow three households to meet in a garden in ways that they haven't been allowed to before, that there's inevitably going to be a bit of drift? Have you factored that into your own models?
Yeah, we factored that in. And first of all, to come back, like one of the issues here is we have a lower level of population risk because of the increasing level of vaccination. But also, I mean, we need to work with people here. You can go to the bathroom in somebody's house safely or unsafely. So what we need to do is to push the messaging around when you're going indoors, put your mask on, wash your hands, and just go about that. So we have to be realistic, you know. Mm. It's people need to go to the bathroom if they're visiting somebody's house. That can be done safely or unsafely. If we do it safely, then the risk of all that remains low.
The other question that I wanted to ask you was then about the timing of all of this. And again, you've kind of said the idea of anticipatory behaviour, and it's been an issue mm-hmm. before. You said that it's important to not observe these things before time, that you try and have to observe these things only on the 10th of May. Generally, with the feel-good factor that there's been from the announcements in the last couple of days, people will almost forget that it's still 8 days before these things kick in. They might start to cross county boundaries, or they might start to socialise over the course of a sunny bank holiday weekend, for example. How much of a danger is there that people will start to behave as if it were the 10th of May, before the 10th of May, and before you've got another 350 or 400,000 vaccines issued?
Yeah, broadly speaking, I see people behaving responsibly. So you're right. I think people have really heard the message. And when I walk around the city here, what I see is people going out for a walk together, grabbing a coffee together. So I do think there's that sense in the population that we can meet up. We can meet up outdoors. We can keep our distance. We'd be enabled to do more things. So in a short period of time, we'd be able to go to the shops. Relatively short period of time after that, we might be able to sit outside together for a drink or a meal. So I think people are understanding the message. They're making appropriate risk calculations that they're not going to destabilize the pandemic by going for a walk with a friend. Mm. And broadly speaking, what I see across society is really high levels of understanding and responsibility.
But it would completely change the models that you've published if people were to behave as if it was May the 10th now and not in 8 days' time.
Yeah, absolutely. So like the different scenarios that we talked through with Neffet and with Cabinet in making this assessment was if A happens, then the profile would look like this. If B happens, the profile would look differently, with quite wide levels of uncertainty mm-hmm. around that. And at the end of the day, the discussion was, you know, we need to move on as a population. This is a low to medium risk way of moving on. And there's a clear message from ourselves and government that we need to monitor now, watching carefully to see if something's going wrong. If something's going wrong, what is it precisely that's going wrong, and how might we intervene to bring things back under control?
One of the advantages that you have when you're trying to pull together models at the moment is that you do have a few international precursors for the impact of vaccination and how it brings down case numbers. What sort of international models do you bring in, or how much do you believe that vaccination is actually impeding not alone people getting badly sick, but also the spread of the disease?
So I have to be careful about optimism bias. The truth is I'm optimistic. All of the data emerging internationally suggests that these vaccines, not only do they protect you from developing a symptomatic infection, not only do they offer you very high levels of protection from getting severely ill, but they also seem to reduce the likelihood that you have a hidden asymptomatic infection, and reduce the likelihood, if you have that you might transmit it to others. And that's really good news. The current models, one of the huge uncertainties in our current modelling is how effective are vaccines in doing that, in preventing hidden transmission from people who are asymptomatic. Mm. Currently, we allow them to range over a very wide range of assumptions, and that gives us quite wide confidence intervals and perhaps makes us a little bit more cautious than we need to be. as we get more information about that, and we're monitoring research from around the world, UK, Israel, US, they're very positive findings, and that will allow us to reduce the uncertainty and be more confident as we go into July, August, September about what might happen if there's further easing of restrictions okay. beyond the end of June.
One final question just before I let you go, because I know this was a line of feedback during the week, and I'm sure there's probably responses coming into the station this lunchtime about it all as well. Some people pointing to what they would see as being contradictions in Neffert's advice. So, for example, Neffert recommends now that it should be permissible for 50 people to attend a mass or a funeral or a wedding, but only for a very small number of people to meet then indoors for the afters. The idea that you could have 50 at a mass, for example, but that you're not supposed to have communions or confirmations at the time, they would see those behaviours as being equally risky or equally safe, and they'd wonder why Neffert or yourselves would draw a distinction between them.
Well, I don't think they're equally risky. I mean, churches are large. The Civil Registration Office, which I was in quite recently, is a good venue. So the concern here is that, first of all, I mean, it's the ceremony that's important. The concern here is that we really, at this point, it's far too high risk for people to be socializing together indoors or for there to be large organized gatherings, even outdoors.
But the difference between 50 people in a church for one thing, a mass, and 50 people in a church for another thing, which would be a communion or a confirmation, would they not be equally risky?
The problem with those things, and you know, obviously for major events like getting married or sad to mourn somebody's sad passing, you know, we do need to support people in grieving, and we do need to support people in the practice of their faith. So that's why that's permitted, if I can put it that way. The concern about those other events, and it's also a concern about weddings and funerals, and we have seen it, is it's the events on the periphery of that. It's the social get-together, which we absolutely realise how important that is to people. But our difficulty is we've seen far too many cases, and sadly we've seen deaths associated not with the formal central ceremony of funerals or weddings themselves, but with the social get-togethers afterwards. And we have a responsibility, frankly, to say to people right now, getting together socially after a funeral, getting together socially after a wedding, or getting together socially for communions and confirmations, which is something which could reasonably be deferred for a few months. It's just not safe to do that right now.
Okay, in summary then, your outlook for the situation, it seems as if that, you know, despite what might be considered as fairly somber projections maybe that you might have, that certainly we sort of get from your tone that there's reason for optimism as long as everyone stays the course and they don't act in ways that aren't sanctioned ahead of time.
Yeah, I mean, I really feel we can do this. I really feel we can get through the next 4 to 8 weeks safely, provided we as individuals take care to keep our contacts modest, and in any contact, ensure it's outdoors insofar as it can be, and that we don't do anything that can transmit the virus. And then equally, there's a responsibility on institutions, organisations, businesses to reinforce the guidance, reinforce the protocols and practices to ensure that whatever goes on in your establishment is safe. This is not the time to push the limits. Please don't allow any drift indoors as part of what you're doing. And please don't try and accelerate the program. It's not safe for us to move any faster than we're planning to move at the moment.
So wait 1 week more then for your intercounty travel. Philip Nolan, we will let you go. Philip Nolan, President of Maynooth University and Chair of the Irish Epidemiological Mathematical Advisory Group at Neffert. Thank you very much for joining us this lunchtime.
On the Record with Gavin Riley. On News Talk.